In 2021, Triton Lake became the title sponsor of the Ireland men's and women's rugby sevens teams. The 2022-23 World Series has just kicked off with the men's side competing in Hong Kong and both squads recently competing in Dubai. This season is looking to be a promising one as both teams look to continue their run of form, with the women's sevens team finishing fourth in the last season of the World Series and the men finishing fifth while also taking home a historic bronze medal from the World Cup sevens. Triton Lake Perform explores the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. Season 1 saw us speak to a number of great guests across the sport, performance and business worlds, such as Lucy Mulhall, Ronan O'Gara and Stuart Lancaster. Today, for the first episode of Season 2, we're delighted to be joined by Jordan Murphy, ex-Irish international rugby player and former head coach and director of rugby for Leicester Tigers. Murphy is now the director of Rugby Coach Management Limited and the non-executive director at Recruit for Spouses. Recently, he took up a role with the Barbarians. Jordan, you're very welcome today.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. And maybe you're here for a day trip, you just told me, but moving out of Ireland for rugby at a young age must have been challenging. What does it feel like to be back?
I love coming home. I've still got a huge family over here and it's very nice to get back in on the flight. Just day tripping today because the Barbarians have a game tomorrow. I guess I moved to England as a young player, sort of a 19-year-old, and I was really happy to do that because I didn't really get a chance or an opportunity to play in Ireland. So I really saw that as a chance to become a professional rugby player. And although it was daunting at times, I'd had huge experience of sort of travelling overseas. Even at that young age, I'd been very lucky to spend a little bit of time in El Salvador with my dad. When I was sort of 13, he was United Nations and an Irish Army officer. And then after that, when I was 16, I went to New Zealand for 6 months and did a school exchange over there. So I had travelled a little bit. I'd sort of done that piece where you sort of leave home and sort of look after yourself, fend for yourself. So although it was daunting to sort of be signing a 3-year deal at Leicester Tigers, it was something that I wanted to do. I was desperate to do to get a chance.
And I remember at the time all of the stories around that, and it sounded very much like you just threw a bag over your shoulder and hopped on a plane. I mean, was there more to it than that? Had you been in touch with them? Or
yeah, no. So I'd kind of been through the school system in Ireland, and I think at the time, I don't think that the system was as good as it is now. I didn't really feel like there was an avenue for me to get selected. Sort of didn't receive a Leinster schools trial, go then out of that, back into that, get Irish schools trials and actually thought, did pretty well. Didn't make any sort of selections or any teams. So it was looking very unlikely that I was going to sort of break into any of the setups. And Leicester Tigers had trained in Limerick. That summer, and the coach who sort of had sent me to New Zealand brought me down, spoke to Bob Dwyer on the sideline, and he said, look, I'm more than happy to take him on a 3-week trial. So as you say, put a bag on my back, jumped on a plane, went over to the training ground at Oval Park on day one. And it was just after the Lions tour in 1997, and I fully expected to be training with the academy, but in with the first team, sort of a squad of 50 players, Martin Johnson, Graham Rountree, Neil Back, guys who I'd watched in the Living with the Lions documentary. They're training on the same field as me, and it was just sort of a bit... that was intimidating. That was sort of mind-blowing. Eric Miller, an Irish rugby player who I hugely respected, and Niall Malone, both there, were both very nice to me and very good to me. But to actually have to go out and train at a higher level than I was used to, that was an intimidating moment. Couple that with, I was billeted for 3 weeks with Martin Johnson's parents. So I walked into a house in Market Harbour and sort of realised that all these photos and pictures and shirts on the walls were Martin Johnson's when I saw him standing in the doorway. So it was important that I, sort of behaved myself in those first 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And maybe before we come back to that, you mentioned you have a big family.
Five siblings, six of us in total. So I'm the youngest. I was the mistake. So the three older lads are kind of all a good bit older, and then a sister and a brother who are sort of 7-8 years older than me.
Yeah.
I was a mistake by a long shot. So when I was a kid, I was told on a regular basis, you weren't supposed to be here. So it kind of gave me that nice little chip on my shoulder that I had to perform, had to proceed, try my hardest. And it was always a... yeah, there was always different names thrown. Runt of the litter was one as well, because I was particularly small in those days. You wouldn't believe it now by the size of my belly mostly. But that back in the day, I was pretty skinny.
And was rugby the main sport? Was there multiple sports?
No, the older guys had all played rugby. For me, as a kid, I really enjoyed football, soccer, and Gaelic football. And that was kind of what I sort of thought I would end up doing. As I said, I didn't really... shine as a rugby player. I can remember playing sort of under 13, 14s, 15s in sort of every team. I think one of the things in Newbridge College where I went was, you know, I played in every team from the D's through to the A's in the first 3 years of sort of playing rugby. So it wasn't that I was exceptional or I was doing anything, but I really enjoyed it. I don't think I really knew how to play rugby properly until I went to New Zealand and learned how to play properly there. But Gaelic football was something that I thought I was reasonably okay at and enjoyed playing, and that was obviously a sport that I would have continued playing if I hadn't have left for England.
Yeah, and then maybe if we go back to being on the pitch with the Martin Johnsons and everyone else, how did you go about establishing yourself, I guess, and making them more aware of you and giving you, I mean, obviously they gave you a chance anyway, the fact that you were training with them, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the academy, but how did you go from there to the team?
Basically, the first week we had a trial game, and at that time Leicester ran three teams, a first team, a second team and a development team, and the development team was predominantly sort of under 21 rugby players from international teams. Very, very high pedigree. They had some sort of under 23s who would have been really talented guys, and I think effectively we were brought in to be cannon fodder for them in a game against them, and we played, and I played pretty well. I remember Bob Dewar being on the sideline, and you know, I'd done something that was I think I'd ran down a winger called Namdi Aziliki, who sort of was on the path to first team, went on, played for London Irish after playing for Leicester in numerous games, and I managed to chase him down and tackle him, which was kind of unheard of. And Bob Dewar, you know, 25 minutes into this development game, said, "Mate, you're coming off, you're playing for the second team next week." And okay. the second week I was there, we played a game at Gloucester in a 17-all draw, and I think there was probably former or future British and Irish Lions, there was probably six or seven guys in that second team that played that day that had either had Lions and international experience or went on to get it. So that was sort of the huge step up. I remember coming back after week three, and the game was cancelled on the third week. The development game, second team game, was cancelled as well because of the weather, and Martin Johnson's mother, Hillary, sort of said, "Oh, I think you've done pretty well. I think they're pretty happy with you." So she was my first agent, threw me in the car and said, "Right, we'll go down and speak to Bob." And went down, came back, said, "Look, there's a 3-year development contract there for you. If you want it, you need to go home, speak to your parents and see if they'll let you do it." But I was pretty confident that that they would be happy with that. And that was the beginning of it, really.
Was your thinking at that stage that given that you hadn't progressed through the Irish selection, that you could go away and get on the radar? Or were you concerned that you wouldn't be on the radar? Or were you even thinking about Ireland?
I wasn't even thinking about it, to be quite honest. Yeah. I just thought there was an opportunity here for me to play professional rugby. And, you know, it didn't really matter where that opportunity was given. I was going to take that. Yeah. I absolutely loved the sport, and I just thought, you know, it was an amazing chance. At that time, you know, I guess I'd almost put my hopes of being an Irish player to the back of the cupboard, and that wasn't something that I was in any way focused on. It wasn't anything other than just getting out and sort of getting an opportunity and playing, you know, the sport that you love.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, obviously you had some major successes then along the way. Are there a few highlights or standout moments that you always go back to?
Yeah, look, I was very, very lucky to join Leicester at a really good time for me. I think, you know, Leicester had traditionally, they would describe themselves as one of the biggest teams in the world, club teams in the world, and they added that in on the success that many of the provinces have and some of the Waikato and some of the provincial teams in New Zealand have now as well. So they've added club team. But when I joined, they hadn't been successful for a few years. Newcastle had signed a dream side together to win the first premiership in sort of 1997. And it was a real chance to sort of have a look at the culture and the club and what made the club good for sort of when they were successful. And we went on a run, 98 through to 2004, where we won four premierships back to back and two European Cups back to back. You know, and then I think throughout my time, I played as a professional player at Leicester for 16 seasons. It sort of consistently evolved, but, you know, always went back to what made the culture good and what made the teams good. And, you know, I sit here before you today as probably the most decorated premiership rugby player of all time. We won 8 premiership titles, 2 Europeans, you know, 3 or 4 domestic trophies in premiership rugby. But then we lost in finals pretty much every other year as well. So, you know, it's probably six or eight finals that we lost in. So there's a lot of silverware and medals that we gained by being a pretty strong team.
And when you look back on your career, do you remember more of the highlights, or do you think back on some of those maybe missed opportunities in finals?
Both, really. I think losing hurts far more than winning. Yeah. Is great.
And the reason I ask is it's a theme we kind of hear, right? That people remember those ones.
I think so. Yeah. And I think, you know, certainly the big finals that we lost, I always frame it up. I don't remember people making mistakes. I don't remember my colleagues making mistakes, but I remember all my own mistakes. I remember all the moments that I think I could have, if I had done that better, maybe we'd have won it for our team. certainly the 09 final against Leinster in Edinburgh was a huge regret of mine. But, you know, I think really being positive and having to frame up the big wins, the two European Cup wins back-to-back, 2001, 2002, are really special club memories for me.
Okay. And then in terms of your Ireland career, is there particular highlights from there?
Yeah, look, I guess I was pretty lucky to receive as many caps as I did for Ireland. You know, people seem surprised when I tell them I got 72 caps, because obviously there was a bit of drama about me not being selected.
And you had injuries at a couple of times.
Playing yeah. overseas and you know, the broken leg before the yeah. World Cup in 2003, that was a tough time for me. But, you know, I guess the Grand Slam in 09 probably is the standout memory in that, you know, what we achieved there after 62 years of not doing it. And the way the team kind of pulled together to get that win was, I think, probably definitely the highlight in green.
In your autobiography, you spoke a little bit about the relationship with Eddie O'Sullivan being a little bit challenging because you were based in England. Tell us a bit more about that.
Oh, well, look, I think it was always going to be difficult. When I'd signed my first contract, I came off contract in around 2000, and at that stage I hadn't broken into the Irish team. I just qualified for England, to play for England through residency, and I got selected, and I didn't really feel like it was probably a warranted selection. Not that it wasn't a warranted selection, I think it was probably one of those ones that maybe would tie this guy in, so he's not going to have the opportunity to play for England. Not that I ever would have ever considered that, but that was kind of my first cap. A couple of times when I was finished or coming towards the end of my contracts at Leicester, I spoke to Irish provinces about coming home, and at the time it wasn't very high on the IRFU's agenda to get me back. I think they were quite happy, or they were maybe unsure about the player that I could be, and I was signed up until about 2005 at Leicester, when the IRFU sort of said, look, we would like most of our players to be at home, playing it at home, and I chose on a couple of occasions that Leicester had showed me a huge amount of loyalty. I was enjoying the successes that Leicester were having, so I chose to stay. And I think because I was kind of in that sort of no man's land, I'd been there for quite a while. It was said to me on a few occasions, look, if you're not at home, we're going to choose the player who's playing at home. And I don't think that ever made the easiest of relationships between myself and some of the coaches who coached. And again, you know, it's having progressed into the coaching world. I think it's a very difficult world, and I probably didn't have the relationship with some of the coaches that I maybe could have worked on myself.
Okay. Do you think your style of play came into that? Because I guess it would be a little bit more unpredictable, more flair than a set system that a lot of the players at home would have had, particularly at 15, right?
Yeah, look, I guess that was kind of one of the things that I prided myself on, that I would, you know, always have a go, I'd have a crack, I would try and create, and we would try and do things. You know, very fortunately for Ireland, we had some great players in the side who could do that. Darcy, O'Driscoll, you know, you had guys who could do that. And I think sometimes people are disrespectful to a friend of mine, Gervin Dempsey, who is a tremendous fullback, who, you know, kind of became the guy who was the, you know, the antithesis of what I was. I was flash and he was, you know, solid. And I don't think that was fair either, because I think he had got a great attacking game. And we got on well, we still get on really well. So it was one of those ones that, you know, I don't think there was ever going to be an issue in around selection. Obviously, I wanted to play every game. He wanted to play every game. We got on very well behind the scenes. Sometimes I just felt it was the way that was managed wasn't probably as good as it could have done. And you know, I have to hold up my hand and take my fair share of responsibility in that as well. It was, you know, a two-way relationship, and it wasn't a great one.
Okay. We touched on a couple of them, but if we go back and think about your career again, we touched on the highlights and those kind of things. Are there particular challenges that jump out? I mean, injury we mentioned with a broken leg. Anything else that jumps out?
Yeah, look, I think the big ones would be the injuries. And for anybody who's a professional player in any sport, you know, to have an injury where you're unsure of your ability to come back and play again. When I broke my leg in Scotland before the World Cup in 03, it was a double compound fracture. Both bones came out through my shin. Yeah. I actually tell this story now and I can smile, I can joke about it. Gary O'Driscoll, the doctor who was there at the time, he ran onto the field and you know, he was trying to get me to take my hand away from my leg, but I couldn't, because when I removed my hand from my leg, my foot would just fall down on the ground. So I was kind of holding it. Yeah. And he was saying, oh, you know, let me have a look, you know, let me have a look. And I said to him, Gary, I've broken my leg. And being the doctor that he is, he said, mate, it's probably just a twisted ankle. You know, you're going to be okay. Let me just have a look at it. And he said, when he when I removed my hands and my foot just dropped and you could see the bones and the blood squirting through my sock, he panicked slightly and started calling for a stretcher, which kind of my response had a swear word in it, but I'm not going to tell you what it was now, but I just sort of said, I told you so, Gary.
Yeah.
And I always get a smile about that, where sort of, you know, in tough times you can find that little bit of dark humor. And I've seen that a lot in sort of people when they talk about resilience and sort of bouncing back from big moments, is there's always a little bit of time for that dark humor.
Yeah.
When I did that, I was told, you know, you may not play again. I think it was David Boos, one of the footballers, had done a big break leg just before that, and he'd finished his career.
Yeah.
Obviously, rugby was perceived to be a more physical game than football at that stage. So when I woke up in a hospital in Scotland, I was told, look, your career is probably over. And I wasn't ready for it. And, you know, that was a challenging time. I think there was some dark moments in that. And I think through your career, injuries like that would certainly constantly make you doubt your ability to play and you know, what's next? What am I going to do next? And I had another particularly horrific foot injury in 2010, playing for the start of 2011, before the World Cup in 2011, in January, which I thought, you know, was going to see me out of the 2011 World Cup, and managed to sort of squeak back in there just due to someone else's misfortune. Felix Jones, in the very same situation that I'd experienced in 2003. I wasn't in the Irish squad. I'd trained, I hadn't played in any of the friendly games, and the last game, Felix jumps for a ball and does his knee, managed to go to that last World Cup as a player, which was huge for me.
No, absolutely. It feels like you transitioned from player to coach in a very short space of time. What was that like, being in a group of players 1 minute, I guess, and then next minute coaching them to a certain extent?
Yeah, it was a challenge, and I think I get asked that question a lot by people who transition roles. You know, when you're on a sales team and you sort of get promoted, you know, how does that look? What does that feel like?
Yeah.
For me, it was something that I wanted to do. My last couple of years, I'd been doing some bits and pieces with the academy. I'd been coaching some of the younger guys. I'd been working with back three players, and I thought, I really quite enjoy coaching. I think this is the thing for me. When I'd finished playing, I was offered a position with the academy at Leicester, and fully intended taking that role. And you know, that was kind of what I thought was a nice opportunity to get, you know, grounded and learn the skills and sort of, you know, maybe start in a quiet place. My first day arrived, and a coach moved, and I ended up being with the first team, which was actually a real challenge, because you know, a lot of the guys had been my friends, but then I had to sort of really command a little bit of respect in regards to what I wanted. And Richard Cockle was quite helpful with me in that regard. You know, he gave me some advice. He just said, you just need to let them see that there's a different you, because I would have always been very lighthearted, very jovial.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you need to have a bit of steel behind that as well. So, you know, just go out and ask them to do something, and when they don't do it, make sure you don't accept that, and you go at them really hard, which I did. Some of the guys who knew me knew that it was probably more of a forced act, but it worked.
Okay. And was there aspects of your playing career that you were able to take into the coaching role, or was it mostly new?
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely aspects of the playing career, and I like when guys go from the professional game into the coaching world, because I think they're very current and they know what it's like for the players, and that was one of the things for me that was important. I'd looked a lot into, I was made captain of Leicester Tigers in 2008-09 season. Martin Corey was captain, didn't finish that season, so I was kind of interim captain in that cup final in 09, but I was made captain the year after that, and I was the first non-English captain in 20-30 years.
Yeah.
So it was something that I'd kind of thought, why me? And I looked at the captains that went before me, and they were all kind of these big gnarly English forwards, you know, your Martin Johnsons, your Neil Back, your Martin Corries, your Lewis Moodies, these guys who'd all been big sort of back five players for England. And it really made me question my leadership, because I thought, I can't be like them. I can't do what they do. I suppose that negative voice on your shoulder tells you, you know, you can't command respect like these guys can command respect. So I really had to look into what leadership was, and very lucky to work with some guys in the military and UK military, and some guys in the States as well. And you know, really made me look into what leadership was. And I think there's a huge amount of being authentic. People use that word a lot, but it's, you know, how you're going to lead and what you're going to do. So for me, it was, you know, I can still be me, but I have to just be the version that works,
yeah,
and the version that, you know, the management have seen that works. So I think when I went into the coaching world, you have a little bit of that doubt.
The captaincy was a good bridge.
Really good bridge, because it actually made me think about it. It actually made me think about what I was doing, with my thoughts, with my actions, with my words.
Yeah.
And one of the big things in my personal values is integrity. And you know, kind of, I had some really great examples of what I did in regards to having that integrity as a player. And then I wanted to have that as a coach, you know. So when I stood up in front of a room as a coach, I wanted to be able to say, you know, you're going to get exactly what I say you're going to get. And that was one of the things that I sort of took from that role and transitioning through. But it is a challenge. I think it is a challenge because people see you in a different role and a different light. And my coaching career probably was incredibly quick in that, you know, sort of 1-2 years in, I was coaching backs in attack. And then sort of 2 years after that, you know, I was probably head coach, but less due to my own ability, and more due to circumstance, I would say.
Yeah. When you look at the game and how it's developed since you stopped playing and you've been coaching, where are the big changes there in terms of physicality, game plans, caliber of players? What have you seen, or do you think there has been much change?
I think there's definitely been a step up in regards to physicality, the out and out, you know, front up physicality that you see. I think that's been growing since the game went professional. You know, every 5 or 10 years we look back and it seems to be more physical, seems to be that many more impacts. The game is different. The game that I started playing in 1997, you know, I chat to people the other day, I've said, oh, it's how, you know, great people are in the air. It was you know, up until 2013, 14, you could compete in the air.
Yeah.
So every time I went up for a high ball, and any fullback went up for a high ball, the likelihood was, well, someone was
there
just
was
going
no
to
penalties.
There was no penalty. Yeah. Someone was going to come clean through and take your legs out. So you had to catch the ball, and then you had to try not land on your head. And then if you did, you know, the start of your career before 2004, 2005, when you did do that, you caught the ball, you were likely to get kicked and stood on by people who were going to, you know, do it. So the game has just come on. It's a much safer place, and it needs to be a much safer place. I think because the physicality has gone up and gone up and gone up, the danger and the knowledge of sort of the protecting people's heads is really it's has improved, but does need to get better. And I think, you know, player safety is paramount. So that from that point of view, it changes, it evolves. It still has the same ethos. I said to you off camera beforehand, I'm with the Barbarians this week, and a lot of people have campaigned for that, which is kind of almost an amateur organization who kind of focus on different things, more like camaraderie, friendship, enjoyment. That shouldn't exist. Whereas I think that's actually exactly what rugby needs. I think, you know, sometimes we can be too professional. We can sort of hate too much. Whereas actually loving the game is something that's important to do.
No, 100%. And since leaving the kind of rugby world, you're a director at Rugby Coach Management, which sounds like quite a unique business. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so RCM was sort of a brainchild of a couple of friends of mine who just... One of the big things I think that I found when I left the rugby world was there was a complete lack of support. And that is something that I really pride myself on. I look back on why I liked coaching, and I sort of managed to look into that. And for me, it's all about people. And that's the good thing that I really like about sporting world, business world. You get the right people in the room and you treat them well and you sort of build that trust and you have that really great culture. You can't fail to be successful. So for me, the RCM piece was quite an interesting one, because, you know, I felt that I wasn't supported when I left and wasn't really supported in my role. And that was something that I really wanted to do. And again, similar with the role at Recruit for Spouses was again, it's just about dealing with people, working with people, ironing out issues, trying to create a really great team. I've been very, very lucky since then as well. I've been doing a couple of days a week with a friend of mine's charity called the Matt Hampson Foundation, which is a really inspiring place. Right back then, I'm not sure it's on my bio, but a friend of mine broke his neck in 2005 and he started a foundation for young people with spinal injuries through sport. And that for me is a really nice opportunity for me to work with people and to help with people who you know, have every right to feel maybe downtrodden, but don't, have a really positive mindset and positive attitude. And that's one of the really great things that I'm enjoying doing alongside sort of bits and pieces and speaking as well.
Okay. Just to go back to Leicester, when in the director of rugby role again, was that an insight? Did you get an insight into the business side of the running of the club?
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking in the context of everything that's going on.
Yeah, so the context of that was a very strange one. I took over... I think the back end of the, as a head coach, the back end of the 18-19 season, and I sort of ran that season as a head coach, and that was a relegation battle. That was where we were really in a lot of trouble. I took over on an interim basis to begin with for the first 4 months, and made some mistakes in that regard, in that I didn't probably affect the changes that I would have done if I was sort of given the reins completely, which kind of took me, I think, 8 or 9 months to get sort of that resolved my, sort of my coaching team and the players that I wanted kind of in around the room. And rugby in the UK and in Ireland is it's a unique place in that, you know, contracts are on a 2-3 year cycle. So sometimes, you know, you don't have necessarily the players that you want. You're inheriting players from coaches from a coach before, or in my position, two coaches before. Yeah. So that season was a really challenging season, but some really great things to be proud of in that, you know, obviously people say, oh, well, it was shocking to see Leicester, who'd been so strong in a relegation battle, but you still have to fight for things and you still have to stay up in a relegation battle. And we did that really well. And I'm really proud of some of the guys who stood up and played, thinking of a guy like Gareth Owen, who retired afterwards, who played in our last game of the season against Newcastle, a big game which we had to win. And he wasn't fit to play. He was one of those guys that I knew he wasn't fit to play. He knew he wasn't fit to play. We said, look, we've no one else. And he went, well, yeah. I'm going to play.
And he gave it everything.
And he gave it everything. And he played for sort of 50 or 60 minutes. And you know, the guys like Matt Smith, club men who just, you know, you admire for what they've given and you know, selflessness, huge things. The club captain at the time, Tom Youngs, being through some huge personal issues, you know, his wife, you know, had cancer and was in a really bad way, and he just turned up every day. You know, he took, I think, 2 days off after he'd heard the news, and then came back and played that weekend. And again, these weren't decisions that I was forcing because we were under the pump. This was what they wanted to do and what they were offering. So that season was a really big learning experience. My second season, again, I was a head coach, and that we were interrupted by COVID. Sort of said halfway through, I became a director of rugby when I wanted to bring in a forwards coach, and in that we brought in a coach who wanted to be a head coach. So it was no problem that was a change of title, and then that changed to director of rugby in around May, June 20. Was very different. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We've no fans. We're shut down. I had to, you know, start balancing the books. All the accounts got dropped on my desk and told, right, you fix that. And obviously there was a lot of money going out and nothing coming in. We didn't know when we'd be back playing in front of fans. So there was a huge redundancy process that I had to manage, having not had a lot of experience in that before. It's not a nice thing to have to do, but you do it because it's your job and it's the right thing to do. So, you know, I tried to manage that again, as I said to you, with as much humility and grace as you possibly can. But again, I had to tell very good friends of mine, club legends who had jobs at the club, that they didn't work for the club anymore, and that wasn't easy. But when the season started again, back end of August, we were finishing the previous season due to COVID, again not in front of fans. Again, I made a tough decision to there was no relegation in place to give opportunity to some very young players. And again, that was probably questioned by some of the board. And was that the right thing to do, to bring young players like Freddie Stewart and Jack Van Poort fell through? And I felt it was, because, you know, it's like Alex Ferguson said, you know, you can win with young kids. And we didn't. We weren't successful. And when the season was about to start the following year, I was sort of told, look, I wasn't going to have my contract renewed come June. Partly financial, partly due to the fact that I don't think the belief was there in what we had set up or the players that we had signed.
Okay. After a long stint, right, between player and coach?
24 years. Yeah. 24 years there as a player and a coach. And it was a really, really challenging time, I would say. Like the first week or so, it just felt like a bereavement or a death in the family. Yeah. I was just in shock.
And no involvement at all really since then? Do you go down and watch games?
No, I've literally been back to one game since then. I went back when Tom Youngs got a send-off against Bristol last season, and he got to walk out with his family in front of the crowd at Welford Road. I went down just anonymously, just dropped in, went and watched him go. I told him I'd be there and gave him his send-off, gave me a wave in the crowd, and then I disappeared. So I haven't been back. I'm actually, funnily enough, I'm going this weekend. Okay. I'm going this weekend. I've been invited by Matt Hampson, who's my buddy, who did bits and pieces. So he's got a nice little box, and he's invited me this Sunday to take the family down. But I've got young kids now, two boys, and the second one is a four-year-old. He's going on 5 in April. He came back from school the other day and he was telling me that he's going to start supporting Leicester Tigers because his friend likes Leicester Tigers, and he had no idea that daddy played for Leicester Tigers and captain Leicester Tigers and stuff. So it was quite nice to hear him talking about a sport, and I didn't think he'd quite understand it if I told him gave him the history, but it was nice that he wants to go. So I said I'd take him.
No, great. And as you look to the future now, Jordan, do you see yourself going back into the high performance coaching world, or?
Do you know, I actually see huge similarities and parallels between it. I see the business world as being something that really interests me. As I said, you know, one of the things that I really loved about coaching was helping people get better. I have an expression about knowing and growing people, and I really see that being something that really floats my boat, makes me tick. If I can do that in the business world, if I can do that in the world outside of rugby, then I'll do that. If I get an opportunity that I think is the right time, right place in the sporting world, then I would definitely go back in. I think, you know, being involved with the Barbarians in the last week or so has made me really appreciate the very special feelings that great teams and great cultures can create.
Yeah.
To be in a changing room, we beat Bath on the weekend, and to be in a changing room with guys who are just, you know, really committed to enjoying themselves and having fun was a very, very special thing. But it would have to be the right place. It has to be the right time. I see a lot of teams under pressure at the minute, both financially, yeah, and I don't think the game in the UK is in a great place. So at the moment, I don't see myself getting back in.
Okay. And then that leads nicely. I guess we're kicking off season two of Triton Lake Perform today. Can you help us wrap up maybe with one piece of advice that you'd give to a coach or someone looking to establish themselves as a leader in a high-performance environment, either in rugby or in business? Because as you say, there's a lot of parallels.
I think being authentic is hugely important. I think you need to know who you are. You need to know what your strengths are, know what your weaknesses are, and try and get better. You don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You just have to have the people who can do those really good skills in the room with you, and trust them. Trust is a hugely important thing, base level for any organization. I did some PD at the New York Giants years ago and got 30 seconds with Tom Coughlin, who was a coach, yeah, and he talked about he said to me, and I didn't quite get it at the time. He said to me, "It's all about the stallions. It's all about the stallions." He's a bit of a cowboy,
yeah.
And I guess what he was referring to is getting the right people in the room as well.
Yeah.
So you got to get your team right. You got to trust them, and if the team isn't right, you got to make harsh decisions, because you got to get the right team, right people who are passionate and care and want to grow and get better. It's your responsibility as a leader to know them, to know what makes them tick, and to actually improve them, to grow them. But doing that authentically is the challenge, I would say.
Yeah, great. That's perfect. Jordan, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been really interesting to hear about your time across Leicester and Ireland and gain more insight into the life of an elite player and coach outside of Ireland. Huge congratulations on a fantastic career on and off the pitch, and best of luck with whatever you take on next.
Thank you.
That's all for the first episode of Season 2 of Triton Lake Perform. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned as we look forward to chatting to a great lineup of guests across the rest of the season.